I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the U.S.-Israeli war with Iran is driving up the price of oil. At points, it has surpassed $100 a barrel. We're already feeling that at the pump and down the grocery aisle. It's driven by Iran's shutting down the Strait of Hormuz and choking the flow of oil. Is this a short-term problem? What does this mean for the global economy? Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. If you drive a car that needs gas, no doubt you've noticed that the price per gallon has jumped in the last several weeks, and there have been downstream impacts on rising prices for groceries and other items. It's all because of the war with Iran, launched by the U.S. and Israel, and Iran's response by shutting down the Strait of Hormuz. The Trump White House said this is all temporary, but it's not clear if that is the case. We're joined by Hugh Daigle. He is a PhD professor of petroleum engineering at the University of Texas at Austin, and he researches energy resources exploration, extraction, and decarbonization. And Dr. Hugh Daigle, welcome to The Source.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about what's going on today. This morning, we saw the price of West Texas Intermediate crude almost touching $100 a barrel. And then Donald Trump said that they were working things out with Iran and that he was backing off his plan to bomb Iran's energy infrastructure. And the price fell quite a bit. Almost immediately, and now the price for a barrel is about $88.50. So what do you make of that?
Well, the market is obviously very sensitive and jittery to what's going on over there. And they're really hanging on every word that comes out of Trump's mouth to see, you know, whether or not this conflict is going to go on for a long time or whether it's just going to be a short-term thing.
Well, they do realize that he just makes stuff up, right?
Well, you know, to a certain degree, these are rational markets, right? So when you look at a supply disruption like what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz, that's a real thing. You know, you're taking about 20 million barrels a day offline, and that's a significant amount of global consumption. So, you know, they're responding kind of at a macro scale to some of these events that are going on. But I think that's superimposed on this overall environment where we're not getting a lot of information on kind of what the end goals here are, what the strategy is. And so really the only information they have are these little scraps that kind of come out periodically. And so it's made for a very volatile market over the past couple of weeks.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment, observation about what is happening with the price of oil, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you think this is temporary, like the Trump White House says, or do you think this is something that's going to be with us for quite some time? So one thing I'm, you know, basically the United States, more or less, energy independence, especially when you consider the oil that we get from Canada and Mexico, overall North American energy independent here. And so people are wondering, like, why is the price of going up so high even for our domestic energy supply?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, the issue with that is that we're trading oil on a global market. So there's all this oil that's coming into the country and it's being refined into products like gasoline and diesel fuel. And maybe some of that's being exported. You know, it's just a big, complicated system. And so nobody is really completely immune from the prices that these commodities are commanding right now. And so, you know, we've definitely seen this reflected in, you know, gasoline prices. Diesel prices are really high right now. So, you know, we're all feeling the pinch to a certain degree.
So this is, it's a global pool of oil. And it's, even though they may pump it out of the ground in the Permian Basin and refine it here in Texas and it ends up in my tank here in Texas, it's still going to be reflecting the global pool. What's happening to that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So, you know, most of the oil that goes through the Strait of Hormuz is destined for places in South Asia and East Asia. So, you know, Pakistan, India, Japan, Thailand have really been adversely affected. But then what happens is there's all these kind of downstream effects, right? So if there are countries where there's demand for oil, which is not being satisfied by things coming out of the Middle East, they're going to look for other places around the world. And so even, you know, tankers coming out of the U.S. with American crude oil, they'll be able to get a higher price for that if they sell it on the global market to somewhere where it's needed. And so that's kind of why, even though, yeah, we produce a lot of oil here in Texas, we're still being hit by the price increase.
So that's really where I wanted to focus, selling the oil that's produced in Texas on the global market. And if they get a higher price for it, then that's what they should do, following, you know, the free enterprise. Although there used to be a law that prohibited the exportation of U.S. oil overseas, that law was taken down in 2015. If that law were still in place today, would we have lower prices?
Well, that's a really good and really interesting question. So part of this goes back to, you know, going back to the oil embargo and the Iranian Revolution back in the 1970s. In response to a lot of the fuel shortages that people saw back then, there is a lot of activity building new oil refineries, particularly here on the Gulf Coast, Texas, Louisiana, that area. And at that time, a lot of oil was coming out of places like Venezuela, you know, other places in Latin America. And the oil that comes from those places has a very specific chemistry, and it has to be refined in a very specific way. It's what we call heavy sour oil. It's got a lot of sulfur in it, and you know, it's kind of really viscous, kind of almost like peanut butter in some cases. And so the refineries were built to refine that type of stuff because, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, we were not the big oil producing powerhouse that we are now, right? There was no shale, there was no fracking. Or very little anyway. And so, you know, we were really reliant on getting that oil in here to refine it to meet our demand. Now, to get back to the question about what if we all of a sudden reinstated the oil export ban, I think that that would probably cause more problems than it would solve because, you know, our market overall, you know, the way that we do business here in the U.S. now is predicated on oil being produced and being able to be shipped wherever it's needed. And so all of a sudden, if we're, you know, hit with a glut of, you know, good quality West Texas, you know, crude oil or crude oil from other parts of the country, our refineries may not necessarily be able to handle that. And so, you know, we're really reliant on this global trade at this point to be able to meet our domestic demand.
Will we be able to meet the domestic demand? Will there be enough oil to go around?
Yeah, I mean, right now, yes, we can see that. One of the reasons that this situation is different from what happened in the 1970s is that a lot of our industry and transportation has gotten a lot more efficient. And efficiency is one of the ways that you can insulate yourself from some of these price shocks. Obviously, it's not going to, you know, not going to completely alleviate it, but it's one way of helping. And so, you know, I think it's unlikely at this point, and, you know, this is just me speculating, but it's unlikely that we're going to see things like, you know, lines at gas stations and you know, that sort of thing, taking back to those iconic photos from the 1970s.
I remember those days. I remember those days. Okay.
Yeah, I've heard my parents talk about that.
Well, as long as we don't, you know, bomb, you know, those... the infrastructure in the Middle East,
yeah,
you know, and that's really the next, you know, people are wondering if that could happen. All right, we're going to take a break here, and you can call in with your questions and comments about what's happening to the price of oil and what's happening, how that could impact our global economy and impacting you. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you believe Donald Trump when he says this is all temporary? It'll soon go back to the price we had before. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about Cesar Chavez and his legacy after these very dark revelations have been made public. But right now we're talking about what's happening at the gas pump and at the pump jack here in Texas and the Eagle Ford Shale and the Permian Basin around the world. And you can call in with your questions and comments, observations. What's your projection? Do you think these prices are going to go back down to where they were before quickly? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Hugh Daigle, if suddenly today, okay, we get they stop the war. Okay, no more bombs. All that stuff is off. They bring the Strait of Hormuz wide open. How long would it take to things get back to normal?
That is, it's probably something on the order of months. And the reason I say that is there has been damage to some of the oil export infrastructure around the Gulf, you know, in various countries. And that's just going to take a long time to fix. You know, these are big, complicated systems. So I think best case scenario, that's probably what we're looking at this point.
So that's if everything kind of went back to where it was before. But I'm wondering about, we're entering into this sort of global hoarding sort of phase where China had already been hoarding a lot of oil, preparing for something like this. I don't think they knew this was happening, but they were being smart and they were preparing for it. And don't you think other countries are going to kind of do the same now? The Middle East will remain unstable. They don't want to go through this again. There will be increased demand moving forward until they can fill up their reserves and make and protect themselves from future shocks.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. I think there's several different ways that countries are going to go about this in the future. I think you're definitely going to see some countries that are going to sit on, you know, emergency reserves of oil. You know, this is something that happened after the 1970s, you know, oil crises. We developed the Strategic Petroleum Reserve here. But there are other paths that you might see being taken. One is just overall electrification of processes that can be powered either by, you know, natural gas sources or by renewables. And so that's one way of just decreasing reliance on oil to begin with. You may see overall demand for natural gas replacing oil in some situations. And that brings up an interesting point that I'll get to in a minute. And then, you know, you also might just see, you know, more countries, you know, exploiting the, you know, oil resources that they have. And so that could, you know, here in the U.S. manifest in more drilling activity eventually if companies see a long-term demand for domestic oil. Now, the thing I want to say about natural gas is that, you know, the United States is the largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, and the second largest exporter was Qatar, and until they closed the Strait of Hormuz, and there's been damage to some of their exporting infrastructure.
They bombed.
Yeah, it was bombed. Yeah, so that's another thing. And so, you know, I think in the short to medium term, we're going to see global demand for U.S. LNG go up, and this could have the effect of increasing natural gas prices here in the U.S. So there's kind of a lot going on here, and it's kind of a choose your own adventure situation of how different countries are going to respond to this.
You could say that the price for natural gas in Texas can be pegged as negative because they actually burn it off on site rather than bottle it and try and sell it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that has been due to, you know, lack of pipelines to get the gas from the Permian down to, you know, Corpus or the Katy Hub or wherever it's being offloaded. That has been alleviated over the past, you know, 5 years or so. But it's true. There are still, due to pipeline maintenance issues and, you know, the, you know, Freeport LNG facility going offline and stuff. Yeah, there are definitely times when we've got negative natural gas prices. But, you know, that may not last forever. We'll see.
Get back to the premise that if the war were to end today, that is unlikely. Iran, they think they're winning this war. They have set terms and demands for them to end their hostilities and opening up the Strait of Hormuz, including the United States to pay for its reconstruction after the war and the closing of U.S. bases in the Middle East. Those two things are non-starters. Iran is unlikely to come to the table and totally reopen the strait.
I think, you know, based on everything I've been reading, that's absolutely true. I think that, you know, they know that this is a, you know, strategic move that they can make to apply maximum pressure. And, you know, I think that's exactly what we're seeing right now. What's interesting is that I've been reading that apparently Iranian tankers are, you know, making it through the Strait of Hormuz.
And Chinese, you know, tankers.
Yeah. Kind of unharmed. So there is, you know, some of that going on as well. But it's, yeah, definitely a bad situation for most of us.
Well, what about Venezuela? Is Venezuela able to add more oil to the market? Is that a solution?
Well, the problem with Venezuela is that, you know, the industry there has, you know, been suffering for a couple of decades now. And, you know, what I've been reading is that it's going to take, you know, billions of dollars of investments and decades of work to get things back up and running there. So that's not going to help out in the short term, you know, at all, unfortunately.
Russia, people were saying this is a big win for Russia because now they can sell oil at a much higher price and they've lifted sanctions. However, Ukraine is targeting Russia's oil infrastructure. Are they able to move oil?
Yeah, I mean, they are still able to move some oil, I think, out of the ports in the, you know, the far eastern Siberia. Obviously, navigating through the Black Sea is a challenge for them right now. But, you know, Russian oil exports are not zero, certainly now by any stretch of the imagination.
And their shadow fleet also being targeted.
Well, yeah, there's that whole thing, too. So, yeah, they still have, you know, they're maintaining their export capacity for sure.
So do you think when Trump says this is temporary, that we'll soon go back to the prices that we had before? Is that just him just trying to keep the price down, you know, in the short term? And I mean, it does seem to me, and I don't know, I'm not an expert like you, but it does seem like oil is undervalued.
Yeah, you know, I've seen some comments to that effect also. You know, it's sometimes with these commodities, you know, the value is whatever you say it is. But I think especially
until you have a crisis of supply.
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at the price differential between West Texas Intermediate, which is our domestic benchmark, and then Brent crude, which is the European benchmark, there's been a really large spread. It's been, you know, something on the order of $20, almost $25 a barrel at points. And so I think that's partly a function of the fact that we are a little more insulated from this crisis here in the U.S. than markets in Europe and Asia are. And so, you know, the Brent crude, that's probably representing, you know, closer to the actual price. And remember, these are futures contracts. It's not actually what you'd pay for a barrel today. Whereas what we're seeing here at home is, you know, a little more, you know, kind of erring on the side of caution on the part of the markets. But I think to your point, you know, I think the president realizes that high gasoline prices are not, you know, not a good thing for the public. And so, if he can, you know, say things to keep that price down, I think there's a big incentive in doing that. So.
But the downside of him saying whatever he needs to say to keep prices down, it seems to be, you know, this is information that Texas really needs to know, the Texas oil producers. If they had an honest assessment of the situation, then they could make good judgment calls on whether or not to invest, on whether or not to start pumping harder.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There was actually an article in the New York Times yesterday about this, you know, basically saying that the folks out in the Permian are, you know, they don't see an uptick in activity anytime soon because this is, you know, there's just so much uncertainty out there about what's going to come next. But, you know, one additional data point I'll kind of throw in there is if maybe an analogous time point in time would have been the summer of 2022, right? That was in the aftermath of COVID and the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and you know, energy prices were just through the roof, and it took a really, really long time for those to come down. You could argue that it took almost 2 years for the market to calm down. So even if things were to stop where they are today, you know, you're looking at a prolonged period of elevated commodity prices. And, you know, who knows, maybe once, you know, the conflict stops and we stop getting all this conflicting information about what's going on, maybe then the market actually responds and we'll see an increase in the price of oil before it starts coming down. That's one possible scenario. But, it's just really hard to tell right now.
Well, they did a survey of Permian Basin oil producers. It was released at the start of the year, what they thought the price of oil would be in 2026. They were all, most of them, the projections were they thought it would be around $60 a barrel, which is not good news. But they were preparing for really low an oil glut. We had been talking about a global oil glut before this whole thing began. So they're having to go from, they were throttling down to let's get back to work kind of a situation. And when you do that, you have to have a lot of capital. Are the banks going to lend? It's not just somebody's hunch. There's a lot going on there.
That's absolutely right. It's kind of like trying to turn around a cruise ship, right? It's a slow process, and there's a lot of inertia. And so, you know, again, you know, how long is this, high price environment and uncertainty going to last? You know, if it lasts long enough, yeah, we will probably still, see things start to change out in the Permian. But for now, I think, like you said, they're just, kind of waiting to see what happens and almost just business as usual until they hear otherwise.
And this is inflationary.
That's absolutely right. Because the problem is, if fuel is more expensive, if I order something from Amazon, it has to get here on, most of the time it's going to come on a truck that's powered by diesel fuel or gasoline. And that's going to be expensive. And then that expense eventually gets passed down to consumers. So overall, it'll just make things more expensive. And then the other thing is, we've been hearing about, shortages of fertilizer. Again, because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, and that's going to drive up the price of food and other things. So absolutely, it's inflationary.
Do you think that that this was a surprise to the people who hit the button to launch the missiles?
I would like to think that this is just basic market dynamics, and it's not like this is completely unprecedented, but I think maybe the response of Iran in terms of damaging energy infrastructure around the Gulf, that may have come as a little bit of a surprise, but it's hard to say. I can't get into other people's heads.
Right. So it seems like Trump has been telling Israel to lay off the bombing of oil infrastructure. He doesn't want it to end up there. But it's still pretty much, anything could happen. This is war.
That's right. Yeah. And the issue of escalation upon escalation is concerning because it's, you don't really know what's going to happen next.
And Iran is also dependent upon the selling of its oil.
That's right. And so, they will want to be able to preserve that capacity as much as they can. So, there's an incentive there for them, not to do anything that's too damaging. I think we've seen a lot of unpredictable stuff as well. So,
including Trump lifting the sanctions on Iranian oil.
Correct. That's
which
right.
Which is kind of like they're giving billions of dollars to Iran to continue the funding of its war and the manufacturing of drones, which can be used to target our troops, our bases, and our ships.
Yeah, it does seem like a bit of a perverse incentive.
All right. Well, Hugh Daigle, thank you so much, Professor of Petroleum Engineering at University of Texas at Austin, for giving us some insight on what is happening with the rising fuel prices, disruptions to the oil supply, and the war in Iran. Appreciate you talking to us.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.